What is life?
The definition of life is a floating, moving target.
Is life more than just this physical existence?
Is it worth it to extend my life, just a life?
What does it mean to really be pro-life?
I came that they may have life and have it abundantly.
Hello and happy Saturday. Welcome to Life Right Now Radio. I'm Rebecca Maxwell, and this is the show which I am proud to host for y'all. So glad that you could join us on this Saturday where we look to live out our pro-life. Yes, we're not ashamed to say that we are pro-life. I mean, who wouldn't be, right? Who doesn't love life much better than the alternative, right? Unfortunately, our culture can't really agree on something that seems kind of fundamentally simple to me. And yet we make the simple things in life incredibly complicated. Well, we're here to clear away the clutter. When we wade into those debates, we have to know exactly what it is that we're talking about. And when I say pro-life, that's exactly what I mean. I think life is valuable. I think yours is. I think mine is. I think every single person's life is a gift from Almighty God, and that we were all made equally and lovingly by our Creator, and we deserve to be free to live that life. I think almost every human being in the world could agree with that when we're talking about ourselves. It's only apparently when we're talking about other people's lives that we feel like we can deny them some of those same rights. Well, we are all about equal rights on this program, equal human rights for all humans. It's a crazy new trend that we're trying out in the here and now. Let's see if it catches on. Equal rights, human rights for all humans. I think it might catch on. Check out our websites online. We are liferightnow.net, liferightnow.net. There you can email us, and by us, I mean mostly me, about the content of the show, any questions, comments, compliments, concerns, critiques, complaints. We'll take them all at the email box on liferightnow.net. Also, liferightnow.net, I'm going to mention it because otherwise I'll forget if I don't do it right away. Check out our essay contest for all the students that are out there, and you've probably heard us talk about it by now. The deadline is fast approaching, April 12th, by the way, for our students' essay contest, our scholarship contest, and we're very, very excited. It's the very first and hopefully first annual personhood essay contest for fifth grade students all the way up to collegiates, and if you want a little bit of free money, just for expressing your best opinion on why life has intrinsic value. Check out the details. Like I said, deadline is coming up. That's April 12th. So you need to get us your brilliant thoughts on paper or e-paper, as the case may be, in a doc file, and send it to us by April 12th so that you can be in the running for that cash money and also the chance to, who knows, maybe save a life or two, maybe change the world one person at a time. It doesn't get much better than that. So check all of those details out at liferightnow.net. Also, very excited that a new event is coming up, new as in it wasn't in existence last week, and now all of a sudden it is. Save the Storks. You've heard us talk about our friends from Save the Storks before here on the show if you're a regular listener. If you're new to our show, please check out Save the Storks Pro-Life Ministry. They are doing great work in a new way, kind of a new generation, a new way of helping reach out to women who are in the emergency pregnancy situation. If they're in unplanned pregnancy, they're looking for help. Well, the folks at Save the Storks reach out to those women where they are and give them the free and also the compassionate help that they need. And their system is mobile. They're taking this show on the road from coast to coast. They're doing a life tour with stops all across the United States, and they are coming to our backyard on April 12th. That's a Saturday for folks that are checking their calendars as we speak, and this is going to be an awesome event as they stop here on their tour for life, and it's going to be at First Federated Church on April 12th, and you can buy your tickets for $10, which is you know, less than the price of going out to the movies, and you will benefit Informed Choice of Iowa and Save the Storks Ministries. We'll be talking about this a little bit more next week and hopefully speaking with one of the stars of the show on the 12th. But international speaker Bob Lentz is going to be headlining this leg of the tour, and Christian recording artist Holly Starr will be there to provide some great entertainment for the night. It's going to be a great cause. It's a chance to celebrate life and to support a great local and a great national ministry as well, to help empower those abortion-minded mothers all over America to choose life. You can't beat it. So you could check it out on our Facebook page, Save the Storks Tour for Life, coming up on April 12th at First Federated Church right here in Des Moines, and we'll have more on that next week. But save the date, spread the word. We want to pack this house. I will be there, and I hope to see you there. Coming up on the show today, a guest that I'm really looking forward to having a conversation with, and have been for a bit of time now, a lady that neither side of the pro-life debate really thinks exists. The former manager of a Planned Parenthood clinic is going to talk to us today. Her name is Sue Thayer, and she will join us here in just a few minutes. I can't wait for you to hear her story, what happened in her life, and why now she is fighting for all life. Got to imagine she's going to have some interesting stories and a very unique perspective. So I can't wait to talk to Sue, and you don't want to miss it. Stay tuned. And before the show is done, I keep telling y'all, this is the pro-life generation. My age, folks of all ages, really, are joining the fight. But there's a new infusion and enthusiasm of young people who are standing up and saying, yes, all humans deserve human rights. Yes, we are proud to be pro-life. And yes, every life should be protected. And when I say young, I do mean young. I'm looking at 10, 12, 14, 16-year-olds that are making that stand. It's not always easy, but they are doing it so well. And one excellent example of young pro-life activism comes from a girl in Canada who stood up at 12 years old, and she shocked her 7th grade speech class with an impressive and compelling pro-life message that pro-life leaders of all ages could learn a thing or two from. But before we get there, we received this week yet more proof that beauty is in the eye of the beholder. And some of the things that we call beautiful and true, you know, you'd like to think that folks could agree that life is a beautiful thing. But that just really isn't the case in our brave new world. And so when we look to the purveyors of beautiful things, real, true, and good things like artists, when we want something beautiful to celebrate in this world, we turn to art and artists to show us that beauty. And these days, at least some artists are using that platform and that display to celebrate the glory, quote unquote, of abortion. And I don't know, that's not very lovely to me. But in an art exhibit that's currently on showcase at the University of Michigan, they're calling it 4,000 Years of Choice, and it's basically glamorizing the history of abortion throughout humanity. They call it a life-sustaining act, according to a report by the College Fix. And so the artist behind the artwork is unabashedly pro-abortion. Her name is Heather Ault, and this is what she does. This is her professional life is dedicated to extolling the virtues and the joys that she sees in abortion. You know, the act of killing an innocent child. Ault is also the creative mind behind the Reproductive Roots note cards, which you may have seen floating around the internet, or at least I've seen, because that's my life. But these note cards have phrases and quotes from various pro-abortion activists against beautiful scenery. You know, they'll take a pretty sunset and use an expression like, abortion is a gift from God. Yes, you heard that right. And I'm looking at it right now. This is the type of thing that this quote unquote artist presents and that this university has chosen to put on full display on your tax dime. By the way, this is a public university. But this is what she says. Things like abortion's a gift from God. Abortion is a blessing. And here's one that caught my eye. Anything 46 million women do every year can't be immoral. Oh, I've got to stop there. You know, I'm just guessing, and I mean fervently hoping, that they wouldn't apply that logic to exonerate any other violent acts against another human being, you know, like rape. Anything 250,000 men do every year can't be immoral, right? That's ridiculous. Who would say something like that? Or domestic violence. Anything 1.3 million wife beaters do every year can't be immoral. I mean, come on, surely morality is based on more than just mass action, right? A bunch of people do it and suddenly that's what we decide is right or wrong. People do bad things too. Anyway, back to the article. A University of Michigan webpage describes the exhibit as, quote, an exhibition of posters about the age-old practices of abortion and contraception as a means to, quote, reclaim reproductive freedom as a deeply personal and life-sustaining act existing through all of human history. Abortion is life-sustaining. Yeah, except for the part where the lives are exterminated. But that's I could see how you could get confused there. That's almost the same thing, except how it's the complete opposite. But close, real close there. The exhibit consists of dozens of brightly colored posters with bold words, phrases, and documentation meant to highlight and celebrate all the ways in which women over the millennia have performed abortions. Because killing our own children at their most helpless is just, you know, the highlight of womankind's history. Wow. I feel empowered. I don't know about you. One poster offers the ancient abortifacient recipe of the ancient Egyptians, where they called for crocodile dung mixed with fermented dough that the woman could use to try and prevent a pregnancy. And the poster says, believe crocodile dung. And I mean, that's just lovely. I'm glad they chose that thought. Another one of the posters is called Cheer Casanova, which touts probably the world's most infamous womanizer for never having children because he used condoms. So he is some kind of hero for women's rights for sleeping with them by the hundreds because, well, he never had kids and he used birth control. So that's enough to make him a moral hero. You know what? This is really an empowering display. I'm so glad that they're using, again, your tax dollars to present this powerful, quote, life-sustaining message. Wow. I mean, just when you thought you'd heard it all, what you needed was an education. And it turns out that empowerment for women can feel an awful lot like being denigrated and objectified to be a pawn in a political argument. But I wouldn't have known that without the college professors, the women's studies professors who are showing us the way through art exhibits like these. You know, one thing I didn't see in the coverage of this particular artistic quote unquote display is that this celebration of abortion doesn't look like it's going to feature pictures of an actual abortion or an abortion's aftermath, you know, and I know that that can cause an awful lot of distress to people, an awful lot of offense. It shocks women. And, you know, sometimes angry feminist professors will attack them, like we covered on the show last week on a different college campus. They'll destroy a display of an actual picture of abortion. But if you put it up in nice graphics with pictures of sunsets and kittens, suddenly it's okay to talk about it. It's just not okay to show a display of an actual, you know, abortion picture in a display of pictures of abortions. Hypocrisy. Now, here's an interesting note that the College Fix put into their report. They asked whether the department that's putting on this display has an official position on pro-choice versus pro-life, and whether, you have to ask, and whether an alternative viewpoint will also be addressed on campus. Those inquiries were met with referrals to the local Planned Parenthood, where all fair and unbiased information comes from. Planned Parenthood. But in reality, that's where sex education has largely come from in our schools for decades now. I mean, now we're starting in some places as early as kindergarten in elementary school. And Planned Parenthood is at the very least consulted, if not actively sought out, to provide this type of sex education. And that's where we're sending our little girls for answers and solutions, you know, except for the little girls who aren't here today. Because we claimed that our rights were more important than theirs. And that's why, you know, as ridiculous as this whole story is, I hope people are offended by it. I hope that they will get mad that their tax dollars are being used by the millions to be spent on PR for neo-barbarism. That's what this is. We're talking about celebrating child sacrifice as though it's a victory for human rights. It's in fact exactly the opposite. It's exploitation. They might, you know, people might even get mad. They might call the University of Michigan and complain, and feel free to do so. But what then? Because remember when we said what one of those posters said, that is actually true. The one thought that's actually true is that 46 million women around the globe will make the choice this year to end their child's life. And that means at least 46 million young girls and boys who will never have the chance at the same autonomy and liberation that we so profess to prize. And that means 46 million times human society will tell us that in order to be a strong woman, you have to kill your weak, defenseless child. That's what it means to somehow be a strong woman. That tiny women have to be sacrificed for women's rights. And I want to know what we're going to do about that. Because this is a cycle of self-loathing that just needs to be stopped, humanity. Especially for the ladies in the audience. Sisters, what are we going to do about this? How are we going to make equal rights equal for all people? We can't fight for rights for ourselves while denying rights for our children. You know, how are we going to educate women on the truth about abortion and the better alternatives that they have? How can we show that life is really beautiful? How about artistically? I mean, call me crazy, but if a ravenous activist could promote this ancient human sacrifice as a celebrated exhibit, and that's what we need to return to here in the modern age, a pro-life artist could also use their talents to shine forth the amazing truth that life is beautiful. I mean, okay, one side says that crocodile dung and genocide is their idea of beauty. And I think that a mother tickling a newborn's toes and looking at the twinkle in their tiny little eyes, I think that's beautiful. I mean, I know which one I would rather see. I know that beauty is in the eye of the beholder, but I have to assume that when faced with, okay, genocide of millions of people and celebrating things like crocodile poop, you know, that's what one side says is beautiful. I know which side I would rather see. In a contest between the beauty of life and celebrating the supposed beauty of death, life is going to win. If this story offends and disgusts you, my advice is don't get mad. Get creative. Get real. Help us provide real alternatives to this ridiculous pro-death message. Because we know a picture is worth a thousand words. Let's use our pictures, our words, all of our talents to show that life is what's really beautiful. Time to take a quick break. When we come back, a former Planned Parenthood employee, in fact, she used to manage a Planned Parenthood clinic, is now a pro-life activist. What causes that kind of 180? what's really going on inside Planned Parenthood clinics, and why do her former bosses not want her to tell us? We'll ask special guest Sue Thayer when we come back. You're listening to Life Right Now Radio.
Pro-life, what is it? Is it merely to believe that every human being, every single human being has dignity and an incalculable value? What does it mean to really be pro-life? Is it a state of mind? Is it merely being brought to tears at the thought of an innocent child being disposed of, like damaged property? What does it mean to be pro-life? Is it a commitment to activism? Is it merely going outside an abortionist's office, praying and providing counseling to young women? What does it mean to be pro-life? Is it a political question? Is it merely voting for the right candidate, picking the right judge, voting for the right party? Is it a religious question? Is it merely going to church, worshiping the Lord, praying for aid and comfort for the needy? Is it a moral question? Is it merely to do what is right, to do what is written on our hearts and do it now? Is it a scientific question? Is it only about our understanding of human physiology, facts, and figures? What does it mean to be pro-life? Truly pro-life? To be pro-life means all of these things, and more. To be pro-life is not to give up, not lower our standards, and not settle for the protection of just some. Not be afraid of defeat, of the future, of death. To be pro-life means to live for others and get off the couch right now to bring the church to the streets, bring the streets to the polling place, and bring healing to our world. What does it mean to be pro-life today? Well, I can sum that up for you in just one word.
Personhood, fighting for the value and dignity of every human life. Visit personhoodusa.com. Hello and welcome to Life Right Now Radio. I'm Rebecca Maxwell, here on the show where we look to live out our pro-life in the everyday. And with us on the line, a guest I'm very excited to talk to because she has a very unique story. And the thing is, at least to me, that I don't want it to be, or at least I don't want one chapter of her story to be unique at all. I'd like to see it happen over and over again. And to explain what we mean, on the line with us is our guest, Sue Thayer. Hello there, Sue.
Hi, Rebecca. It's great to be with you.
I'm so glad you could join us today. Now, Sue, I'd like to begin by just telling us a little bit about you, about your story.
Well, I live in Storm Lake, Iowa, and I worked at the Planned Parenthood here in town for just short of 18 years. Started there in 1991, feeling like I was really going to be able to help women. Worked there until December of 2008 when the Planned Parenthood in Storm Lake began doing webcam abortions, and they told me that they were downsizing, and that's why my position was eliminated. But I had been pretty vocal about my opposition to webcam abortion, and I really believe that I was fired because, you know, I was not on board with their plan.
You mentioned that you started working out, working at a Planned Parenthood clinic because you wanted to help women. Now, I know that that's what a lot of people think that Planned Parenthood does. Is that true?
Well, at the time that I started, Planned Parenthood was the only place in Storm Lake, really, where a woman could go and be on a sliding discount. Meaning that if she couldn't pay, she could still get services. So I really felt good about that. We did pap smears, breast exams, screening for infections. We treated infections, those kinds of things, and really served, you know, a very large portion of women in Storm Lake. But, you know, over the years, I came to have just a better understanding of abortion and what it is. And I watched as Planned Parenthood sort of shifted from being mission-driven, really. In the early days that I worked there, they had their mission statement on the wall in every facility. And it was basically just, you know, to help the women and men of Iowa and, you know, something that pretty much every employee bought into. But that really switched over those years that I was there, and it became more driven by the bottom line and how do we make money, how do we market our services, profit at all costs. By the end of my time there, nearly every center in Iowa was doing abortions, and every center had a goal for how many abortions they would do per month. And it was a mandated thing, and if you didn't hit your goal, you better have a corrective action plan for how you were going to fix it the next month. So it really became just a business, an abortion business, and my eyes were open.
Yeah, and I think that's an important point that a lot of people don't realize. Through Planned Parenthood's very good at marketing themselves, and I'm slightly younger, so I've seen it, you know, all across college campuses, in high schools, they're there, and they have representatives, and I don't think that many people realize that abortions make a lot of money for Planned Parenthood. I mean, all those services that you mentioned, why would they be pushing abortion as, you know, as though you have to have this many per month in order to meet the bottom line? That's a business plan.
Indeed, it was. And, of course, a surgical abortion, Planned Parenthood always had challenges with that because they would offer surgical abortions in Sioux City and Des Moines and the Quad Cities and Iowa City and Cedar Falls, and so they would have to have a physician that was willing to travel to all those places. And that was a very daunting task, to find a doctor that was willing to do that and able to travel and deal with weather challenges and all of that. And, of course, it was very expensive for Planned Parenthood. And so the idea of webcam abortion was born, where a doctor could be in a central location and really provide abortions all across the state without ever leaving her office.
Yeah, and I know that that's been a huge issue here in the state. A big fight has ensued politically over the webcam abortions. But what you said, just going back to what you said a couple of minutes ago, is that your mind started to change when you started to more fully realize what abortion actually is and the true impact of that. It's beyond a procedure. It really is a kind of a life-altering event. When did things start to turn, and what were some of the things that you saw that moved you in a direction away from Planned Parenthood and toward being pro-life?
Well, you know, it's interesting, Rebecca. In my interview to become center manager there, they asked me what I felt about their surgical services, and naively, I really didn't even fully understand everything that happened at Planned Parenthood, because in Storm Lake, it's simply family planning. There were no abortion services, you know, at that time. But I said that I felt that abortion was murder, because there's a little heartbeat within the first month after conception, and, you know, an abortion obviously terminates that life. And the interviewer at that time said, well, we're going to have to agree to disagree, because it's not murder until the fetus is viable. And so I left there thinking I would not get the job, but they must not have had, you know, a lot of applicants, because I did get the job, even though I really fundamentally disagreed with their, you know, their purpose. But within a few months of being hired, I did spend a day in Des Moines at their abortion facility there, and watched many, many abortions being done that day. And it's a very difficult thing, you know, to be a part of, to watch. But for me, you know, what that did was make me commit even further to the family planning part of Planned Parenthood, thinking that I have to do what I can to try to prevent, you know, the need for abortion. And if that means educating women and handing out birth control pills and, you know, ultimately the Plan B, you know, I gave out hundreds, possibly thousands of those, you know, in the years that I worked there, always thinking this is going to prevent a surgical abortion. So it was kind of a change in my heart that was happening, and it was also a change in Planned Parenthood. I mean, they became more, as you know, as I said, business-driven, more profit-driven, and I was really in a position where my faith was growing, my personal life was changing, and I got in a church where I was really being fed the, you know, the full gospel, and they were nice to me there, even though I worked at Planned Parenthood, and they knew what I did there. And so it was that kindness, really, that helped, you know, bring me around. But I had also found a Christian radio station in this area, and I didn't even know such a thing existed, but I would listen to those uplifting songs and some of the teaching, and I finally ended up taking a radio into Planned Parenthood so I could listen to it even while I was working, and I was often there alone because it was a very small center, but God worked on me through, you know, many of those programs, and I ended up hearing about Iowa Right to Life, and I called their office in Des Moines when Planned Parenthood started doing webcam abortion, because in my mind I couldn't imagine that was even legal, really, to do an abortion without a doctor in-house and to have non-medical people doing things like vaginal ultrasounds was really just beyond my comprehension. And I kept thinking, I have to tell somebody. So that's how I got connected with Iowa Right to Life and called them actually while I was still employed there to tell them what was going on. So,
well, one of the amazing things about your story is that it makes you someone that neither side of the battle over abortion really believes exist until they meet someone like Sue Thayer, who is our guest today on Life Right Now. And the reason I say that is because, I mean, your former, I don't know how much contact you have with your former employers at Planned Parenthood, but I have to imagine that they're not too happy about the transition of someone from the inside, as it were, now speaking out publicly against their main source of profit, which is abortions. And then pro-lifers tend to think of folks that work in abortion clinics. Unfortunately, they tend to, I don't know if demonize is the right word, but to say, oh, well, they're the enemy and they're the ones that are doing all the bad stuff, so we're fighting against them as much as we are against abortion. So you're kind of at an interesting crossroads. And I bet you hear a lot of fascinating things from both sides.
Indeed, I do. It's been pretty obvious to me over the 3 years or so that I've been speaking that Planned Parenthood is not particularly happy with my conversion, my transition, and they've written some letters to the editor in my local paper and, you know, around the state just about I'm a disgruntled former employee. And And, you know, that's okay. I'm happy to talk with anybody about, you know, what goes on there, what happened in my life. You know, I'm pretty much an open book about it, and there aren't really any secrets anymore, and that's a good thing. But, you know, it tells a lot that when they terminated my position, they offered me a severance package. And in my years there, I had rarely heard of them offering anybody a severance package, and so I was very surprised. But in the fine print on this very generous package was a small line that said I really couldn't confirm or deny that I'd even worked at Planned Parenthood.
Wow.
So they knew, I mean, they knew, I think, where I was headed and tried to get me to sign that several times, but I really resisted the urge to take that bait, and if I had done that, of course, I would have never been able to speak about it. So I'm thankful that I didn't. You know, as a single mom, it was very tempting to take that large chunk of change because it was very appealing to me, but I just knew in my heart that would be wrong. It would just, you know, make things even worse. So anyway, I'm glad I didn't do it.
Well, I am too, because it means I get to talk to you today. And that seems like it would be people acting out of fear. I mean, Planned Parenthood is a huge, huge entity. It's national. It's global, I believe. Now, what would be one of the things that they would be afraid that you would talk about that they don't want the public to know?
Well, certainly webcam abortion, you know, is one of the big ones. It was their desire, and you know, in the first meeting where they made the announcement about webcam abortion, they made it clear that they plan to market the protocol 4 webcam abortion to every family planning clinic in the country. You know, they touted it as the first in the nation. The idea was born, really, in the CEO's living room when she was watching a crime scene show where they used, you know, a Skype-like connection, a secure Skype connection for something on this show. And she said, you know, why couldn't we do that with abortion? And so that's kind of where it came from. But, you know, Planned Parenthood, like you said, just as you said, have gotten so big. And oftentimes, I think, they feel like they're above the law. I mean, if there's a state, Texas, for instance, that has put some kind of limitations on the funding that they receive in their state, you know, Planned Parenthood will immediately file a lawsuit saying, you know, that that's unconstitutional, it violates women's rights to put restrictions on anything, that Planned Parenthood is entitled to that money. So they, like you said, they've just gotten so big that I think they feel almost entitled to, you know, $542 million taxpayer dollars in the last, you know, report that they put out while they were doing 333,964 abortions, you know. And I think in all good conscience, if people stop and think, wow, we paid them millions of dollars to kill hundreds of thousands of our babies, you know, it makes no sense.
No.
And the more people talk about it and speak about it, the better off we are. And, you know, the 40 years that after Roe v. Wade, people didn't talk about it much. I mean, it was just kind of swept under the rug, and there were a few people here and there that were, you know, trying to bring it to light, but Planned Parenthood likes to keep it quiet and, you know, basically kind of keep it under wraps and not really explain this is what we do with all this money and so forth. So they don't like people that shed light on that.
Well, I can imagine. But we like you. We like you, Sue. Sue Thayer. She is our special guest today on Life Right Now Radio, a former Planned Parenthood employee and one of some standing for quite a long period of time. And she has made the transition. She's come over to the dark side, I guess you could say, to use a Star Wars reference. But now she is being vocal about what Planned Parenthood actually does. And she's fighting for life, fighting for all of us to get that chance at life that God gave us. Now, Sue, what would you say to people who are doing now what you used to do, to people who are working in clinics? Now, maybe they think that they're out to help women, but maybe they have some questions in their mind, some doubts. What do you say to those folks?
Well, I love to talk with anyone that works at Planned Parenthood or used to work at Planned Parenthood. There's just a comfort, I guess, really, in being able to share, you know, some of the stuff that happens in there and some of the things that we did that at the time seemed okay. And then after you get out of there and you look back, you think, oh, I can't believe I did that. But, you know, working in Planned Parenthood is very lucrative. You know, they're well paid. I had 6 weeks of vacation, made lots of money, had a flexible schedule. You know, I was employee of the month many times over. My reviews were always great. And I felt like as a single parent with, you know, lots of kids, how would I ever leave here? You know, what would I do? How would this work? And so I was nervous about it. And I knew that the time was coming where I was going to either be forced to quit because I would refuse to do, you know, the abortion procedure, the vaginal ultrasound, some of those things that they were going to be expecting me to do, or they were just going to walk in and fire me. And ultimately, that's what happened. But, you know, getting out of there is an amazing relief. And for anybody with a conscience, which we all have, you know, we may deny it for a time, and I did that, so I know how that works, but we know that what we do there is not a good thing. And when you do finally get out of there, it is a wonderful release. And it would have been very helpful for me to have somebody like, you know, Abby Johnson, and then there were none to go to and say, I just got fired from Planned Parenthood. You know, what can I do? What I need help. I don't know where to work. You know, all kinds of things. And there's a certain stigma that goes with being a Planned Parenthood employee. So if you've worked in the abortion industry, you know, you may have trouble finding another job. But I guess I would say bottom line is there is life after Planned Parenthood. You know, God is good. He does forgive. And, you know, if we tell him we're sorry for the things that we've done, there is forgiveness and there's new life and there's always hope. And it is scary to speak out, you know, if you're not used to doing that, which really none of us are used to going up against a big company like that. But it's very rewarding and very freeing to tell the truth.
Amen to that. And yeah. One of the things that was so awesome, I thought, as I bookmarked in my mind as you were telling your story, is that you found a church family that was willing to love you, to tell you the truth, but to love you. And I think that is awesome. One of the things that we focus on here on the show is to really activate our brothers and sisters in Christ to live out what it means to be pro-life. And that can look differently in different scenarios. But one thing that we really don't want to do is show people that yes, we hate murder. We don't, you know, that's something that we can't tolerate. God hates murder. But at the same time, we have to love the people that are involved in these interactions that we're having with folks that might disagree, that maybe have had abortions, or, you know, in like some of your colleagues are actually performing abortions. There is no unforgivable sin in that context. So I guess to wrap this up, what advice would you have for pro-lifers who are seeking to minister at clinics to clinicians in this fight? How can we do it right?
I would say never, ever, ever give up. Stand firm. You know, sometimes it seems like our efforts are going unnoticed. You know, is anybody seen? Does anybody care? But it matters. It all matters. And, you know, God hears our prayers. And it's important to pray at home and while we're driving, but really the best prayers that we can offer are in front of an abortion facility. You know, look up and see, is there a 40 Days for Life going on? How far away is it? You know, can I get there for a couple hours and offer encouragement? Take them an umbrella, you know, take them some hot chocolate. But the prayers in front of, you know, an abortion facility are huge because they bless the women and men coming and going, and those that drive by, and certainly the workers inside are blessed by it. And while you're doing all that, you're blessed too because you're spending time with God. So that's a huge thing. But also, you know, write letters to the editor. And it's kind of scary to put yourself out there, but a short paragraph about, you know, did you know how many babies die in Iowa every day? 13 babies die at the hands of abortionists every day in Iowa. And just write it and sign your name and let people know where you stand. And host a movie night in your house. You know, get a great pro-life movie like Bella or October Baby. There's lots of them available. And, you know, invite your neighbors over. Ask your pastor or priest, can you spend 1 minute every week from the pulpit talking about pro-life? And, you know, there's a ministry called Breakpoint, and that's their... their goal is to have pastors speak from the pulpit about it 1 minute every Sunday, just about pro-life things, and get that out there so that people are aware of it and thinking about it, because it really is the most pressing issue of our time. And if we can't get that right, you know, then we're in a lot of trouble.
Well, that is certainly true. And that's one of the reasons that we're so glad that you could come on with us, is so you can lay down the truth here on Life Right Now Radio. Thanks so much for your time today, Sue. Sue Thayer has been our special guest, former Planned Parenthood employee, now pro-life warrior herself right here in Iowa. Thanks, and God bless, Sue. We'd love to have you back anytime.
Thank you, Rebecca. God bless you as well.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks to Sue Thayer for sharing her awesome story with us. It is a unique story, but I don't want it to be. I don't want it to be a unique story. I believe and I have seen. And Sue is here to testify that there is hope for women after they have had abortions, after they've performed abortions. There is hope for women, for men. There's always the possibility of redemption, of forgiveness. There's a better way. And one of the places that she mentioned, one of the resources that she mentioned, is an organization called And Then There Were None. And if you know someone that is looking to get out of the abortion industry. It's just, it's not what they want their life to be about anymore. They're uncomfortable with what they're being asked to do. You can hear that voice in your conscience saying, just no, no, I don't want to live like this anymore. This isn't right. Then look up, and then there were none. And then there were none. It's a pro-life outreach that can provide legal, spiritual, emotional support, and they provide financial support as well for folks who want to leave the abortion industry. It can be a very scary thing, but as Sue proves, it can be done, and there is life after death in this instance. There's a new chance at life. So seek out, and then there were none. I highly recommend it, and I think you'll be glad you did. And for those of us who are on the pro-life side of that fight already, maybe on the other side of that picket line, as it were, I think this is a great reminder to pray for those who are in abortion clinics right now, today, performing abortions, who are maybe manning the desk at the Planned Parenthood clinic near you, who act as janitors, security, clinicians. Pray that their eyes will be opened and their hearts soft. Pray for them. They need redemption. They need hope. They need healing too. When we come back, as promised, the speech on abortion delivered by a 12-year-old girl that's more powerful than just about anything that you're going to hear from a politician's mouth or, sadly, from many of our pulpits on Sunday. In 5 minutes, this gal delivers an amazing speech on abortion at just 12 years old. You got to hear it. When we come back, you're listening to Life Right Now Radio.
More than 500,000 children are currently in foster care in the United States.
Over 90% of children sold into sex trafficking in the U.S. come from foster care.
The average age for children being recruited from foster care to the sex trade is 12 years old.
These children are being sold for sex more than 10 times a day, and most of them don't live past the age of 18.
We need more foster homes. Is God calling you to help children in foster care? Open your heart. Open your hands. Open your home.
And we're back one more time with Life Right Now. This week, I'm Rebecca Maxwell. Well, I'm Rebecca Maxwell all the time. Every morning, last I checked when I woke up. Ending our fun-filled romp this week with a powerful pro-life speech delivered by a 12-year-old girl. Now, this was for a speech competition a few years ago, but as the way things are with the internet, it's just sort of starting to make the rounds again. This gal is 16 years old now. When she was 12 years old, she delivered what her teacher called a controversial speech. She was disqualified from her school's speech competition, in fact, in seventh grade, because the topic was abortion. And of course, we just can't talk about that. But when their teacher heard the speech, she was so blown away by it that she changed her mind. Her name is Leah Mills, and she went on to win the competition with this speech.
What if I told you that right now someone was choosing if you were going to live or die? What if I told you that this choice wasn't based on what you could or couldn't do, what you've done in the past, or what you would do in the future? And what if I told you you could do nothing about it? Fellow students and teachers, thousands of children are right now in that very situation. Someone is choosing, without even knowing them, whether they are going to live or die. That someone is their mother, and that choice is abortion. Every day, 115,000 children are dying through abortion. 115,000. That means that 5,000 children would die every hour. All those lives, gone. All that potential, gone. And all that hope and future. Go on. Now, I know what some of you might be thinking. Oh, it's not really killing. After all, a fetus isn't a child, right? Why do we think that just because a fetus can't talk or do what we do, it isn't a human being yet? The word fetus comes from the Latin word, meaning young one or young child. Some babies are born after only 5 months. Is this baby not human? We would never say that, yet abortions are performed on 5-month-old fetuses all the time. Or do we only call them humans if they're wanted? No, fetuses are definitely humans, knit together in their mother's womb by their wonderful creator, who knows them all by name. Some people might say that, since abortion's legal now, it doesn't matter. It's not our business. But if an action is unjust, it needs to be illegal, and it has to be our business. And this particular law has a huge impact on our society. In 1997, over 1 million abortions took place just in the U.S. And just last year, over 42 million abortions happened worldwide. I'd say that's a huge impact. I know some people say that the mother has a right to abort. After all, her life is dramatically impacted by having a baby. But I'm asking you to think about the child's rights that were never given to it. No matter what rights the mother has, it doesn't mean we can deny the rights of the fetus. Talking about the mother's choice, the mother may have had a choice not to have unprotected sex in the first place. We must remember that with our rights and our choices come responsibilities. And we can't take someone else's rights away to avoid our responsibilities. At this point, I imagine the age-old question arises. What if the mother didn't choose to have sex? What if she was raped? But let's look at the facts for the U.S. as an example. Only 1% of all American abortions are hard case categories. This includes rape, incest, and the life of the mother being in danger. 1%. That hardly justifies the disturbing volume of abortions that happen these days. And who's to say abortion's the easy way out? I don't think people understand the effects of abortion on a woman. I don't have time to list all the negative after effects, but here are a few examples of the physical effects. 17% of women who've had abortions face complications in their subsequent pregnancies. Some may not even be able to give birth at all. They are also at a greater risk of developing breast cancer if they have an abortion. But perhaps the worst effects are the emotional ones. Women who've had an abortion tend to have more mood disorders, substantial enough to provoke them to harm themselves. In addition, women who've had an abortion are 5 times more likely to have problems with drug and alcohol abuse. Abortion leaves a woman feeling lost and uncertain about their future. Almost 1/3 of all women who've had an abortion are dissatisfied with their decision. It certainly is not the cure-all people think it is. I read a story on the Focus on the Family website. It was about a girl who had an abortion. She writes, "I had an abortion at the age of 17, and it was the worst thing I ever did. I would never recommend it to anyone because it comes back to haunt you. When I tried having children, I lost 3. Something happened to my cervix during the abortion." Sharon Osborne. Hers is just one of the many heart-wrenching stories that nobody tells these days, and those same ones are the ones that we need to hear about. Thank you for taking time to think about the issue of abortion, to think about the unborn, and to think about the effects of abortion on a mother. If you walk away with anything after this speech, walk away with the words of Horton. You know him, the elephant that risked his life to save that little speck. Remember him and his famous quote, "Even though you can't see them or hear them at all, a person's a person, no matter how small." Thank you.
And that, ladies and gents, is How It's Done. Congratulations to Leah Mills. I mean, that was amazing, sister. I am impressed. When she was just 12 years old, she won her school speech competition after being told it was just too controversial a stand to take. Well, she took it anyway, and she's still taking that stand across where she lives, which is in Canada, and now across the globe through the internet. And Leah's not alone. We know that there are young voices out there that are changing the world for the better, fighting for life, for the cause of all human rights. And guys, just so you know, we are listening and we are standing with you. I'm Rebecca Maxwell saying so long for this Saturday. See you again next week. Tune in to Life Right Now Radio.